Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
And happy party Friday, everybody. Julie Hayden, Chuck Bonnywell here, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, The Truth Straight Up, brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. Chuck, once again, is in hair and makeup. I hear him coming down. No, actually, he was on the phone with Dave Williams. Not surprisingly, but disappointingly, the federal court said that Colorado, they ruled against the Colorado Republican Party's bid to close the primary. So they're sort of discussing strategy moving forward. But pleased to have with us on this party Friday, Dr. Janik Joshi. He has recently announced that he is going to be a candidate for the Republican nomination in CD8, which is where we live. And I know I will be voting for you. And hopefully, here comes Chuck from hair and makeup. And so, Dr. Joshi, wanted to have you on.
You got our endorsement without even.
No, I know, Dr. Joshi.
You even said a word. I mean,
I've spoken to
you. You must be good.
No, I spoke
you to
you.
Must be good.
I spoke to him at length on the phone.
Thank you.
No, we spoke at length on the phone. And you remember me, sir, but when I was a TV reporter, and I don't even remember what we interviewed you for, but I interviewed you several times for stuff because you were a state lawmaker. But let me say hello, welcome to the show. And I'm just going to start out open-ended. Why don't you tell folks a little bit about yourself and why you decided to jump in the race?
And why Julie loves you already.
And why I love you already.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Chuck and Julie both. And nice to seeing you again after a few years. You pronounced my name correctly. That's even better. But again, I'll just introduce myself. My name is Janik Joshi, and I am originally from India. I immigrated over 50 years ago.
Where in India were you from?
I am from a town called Ahmedabad. It's in Gujarat state. Uh-huh. As a matter of fact, when Mr. Trump was president, the Prime Minister of India invited him to India and held a very big rally. And that is my hometown. That's where he has been.
And that was Modi? Was it Modi?
Yes, Mr. Modi. And because he is from my home state too. Ah. He used to be the chief minister over there. And there was a brand new cricket stadium, which is the largest in the world.
Wow. Whoa. That's pretty cool.
It's like over 110,000 people, and it had not even opened yet. And that's where they did the rally for him. I guess that will be his largest rally in his lifetime. That he
what events were they going to hold in there?
Well, it was just the rally he did. Yeah.
No. But I mean, you know, the rally is over, but it was built for what?
It is a cricket stadium.
Cricket stadium,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the largest one used to be in Melbourne, Australia, which was, I believe, around 90,000. Okay. So they built this bigger than that.
Oh, you guys like your cricket, huh?
You bet. So anyway, I came all over 50 years ago after I finished my medical school, young, 23 years old. And ended up in New York City. And back then, when you immigrate, you had to go to the either consulate or the embassy. You had to have an interview. They would first tell you whether you are eligible or not. If they think you are a good person to come to United States, then they will give you the approval. Then you actually had to go get a medical exam. Mm. And a blood test and a chest x-ray. And
they luckily we've gotten rid of all that.
No. I kind of take an objection to that. All the laws are still on the books.
Oh, I know, but we don't care.
Nobody's implementing
anymore.
And enforcing. That is the problem.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
I mean, we are a country of law-abiding citizens, but nobody follows the laws anymore, it looks like.
Except us, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of us, but it seems like a lot of people don't. But anyway, And then you come to United States with this little X-ray, yellow, big, if you remember, when they used to be in the X-ray plates.
Right.
Then that they were all in a yellow folder with your name was written in big letters at the hospitals. And that's how it was. And it was sealed. And only the immigration officer could open that.
Ah.
And then when you arrive in the United States, they will open it. They will look at it. Then they will let you in. That's what it used to be.
But looking for tuberculosis or whatever?
Exactly. No, they were looking for tuberculosis and venereal diseases.
Right.
And I will get to that in a little bit.
Okay.
To that
okay.
Issue.
Okay.
But so I ended up in New York City, did all my training there, internship, residency, fellowship, everything. Moved to Colorado, where I practiced for 30 years in internal medicine and nephrology, which is kidney disease. Retired in 2008 and was enjoying life. And then the call came, 2010, I jumped in. Did my civic duty, got elected to the state house.
Tea party, year of tea party.
Yes, tea party was big at that time.
Yeah.
Yes. And then I served three terms. And then I kind of lost my primary. That's another story. And then so for about 5-6 years, I've been kind of enjoying second retirement.
Didn't you take on Larry Liston?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, so you losing the primary is sort of, for folks who don't understand, a badge of honor, because what happened, I know Dr. Josie may be too polite to say this, but Larry Liston is like one of the head rhinos down in El Paso County. So it's a badge of honor that they threw everything against you because you were making too much of a good difference at the state capitol, and we certainly can't have that. So,
And then I kind of took a second retirement, enjoyed life again. We did a lot of traveling and everything. But I kind of stayed sort of low-key. Once you have the fire in the belly, it never goes away.
You
can only hold on for so long. Then he said, my gosh, I mean, this is not the country I came to anymore.
Wasn't the one we were born into.
Right, exactly. And I mean, this country had almost adopted me, basically, and gave me all the opportunities. And I have sort of enjoyed my American dream. I mean, not too many people in the first generation like me do what I have done. So, I mean, I feel very fortunate, but at the same time, I can see all these opportunities now the newer generation will not have.
Yeah.
Like my grandkids and my kids. I mean, I tell my kids, we have two daughters, and I said, you are done. I mean, but my grandkids, I want to make sure that they will have the same American dream.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and this is, it's kind of, we've talked a lot about this on our show. This is shaping up to be a very good year for grassroots America First kind of candidates in Colorado. We've got Lauren Boebert running in CD4. We've got Ron Hanks running in CD3. We've got Dave Williams running in CD5. Now you running in CD8. And I got to admit, as I've said, for somebody who lives in CD8, I have, and I've listened to most of the candidates speak and have not been impressed. They are not what I would consider to be grassroots or America First candidates at all. You know, we've got Gabe Evans, who has an F rating, And so, Dr. Josie, first, thank you for jumping in. And maybe talk a little bit about what you would hope to accomplish and where you would fall, I guess, in sort of these, you know, why people should vote for you. I know it's an open-ended softball question, but I think it's an important one.
Well, I mean, as a immigrant who was really aspiring to achieve the American dream, my principles have always been exactly the same. I mean, why did I leave India? I mean, the main thing back then when I was growing up, India was very corrupt. I mean, it was a one-party system. There was no hope to move up if you are lower-class or middle-class people, even though I was a doctor and I had just received my medical degree, but without giving bribes, and the corruption was just horrendous. And so I always felt that the best thing to do is keep the government small, keep the regulations as minimal as possible, and keep the taxes as low as possible. Just tax citizens only what government needs. Don't create jobs for the bureaucrats.
Yes, yes.
Plus, as a physician, sanctity of life is very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I know that we all have to be safe and protect ourselves, our families, and all that. So Second Amendment is very important to me too. So these have been my basic principles. And any bill that came during 6 years I was there that was against this, I voted no. I mean, I didn't care. In the first term, we were in majority, as probably you know, Julie, by one vote.
Wow.
So there were bills that Republicans were bringing, which were kind of against these principles. And I started to vote no on Republican bills. And so they started to call me Dr. No. Because I voted so many times no.
Well, let me ask you, what was your opinion on the vaccine mandates under COVID?
when we had vaccine bills, I said, how could you give so many vaccines when some of the stuff we don't know? As a physician, I know some vaccines are important, okay? They have been proven, like smallpox. I mean, we wiped out smallpox. I have smallpox. After, I think, in 1970s, one of my nephew was the last one who got it. Then even in India, they stopped it because there was no more smallpox. Measles, for example, we know that works. But something we had recently, it was never proven. I mean, it came out so quickly. And why, if the vaccine is working, tell me why they need immunity by the government?
Yeah. I'm going to go with money.
I'm going to. That's what it was. It didn't work and it gave you ill effects.
Yeah.
I mean, they were giving little kids the vaccines. I mean, now we know that they get, I don't know what the latest number is.
Oh, it's huge. It's
like 15 or 17 vaccines.
Yes, yes.
I mean, when my grandson was born and my daughter called me and she says, Dad, what do I do? They want to give him next week this 7 or 8 vaccine. I said, no, tell me which one. The vaccines are working. I know that. But don't give them all at one time.
No.
Tell them that give maybe 2 or 3 this week. Let us see what he's doing. Then go give him some more next week. Because the problem comes is when you give so many vaccine and somebody has a reaction, you don't know
what the reaction is to.
What it is, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
These are pragmatic medical issues.
Right.
I'm not anti-vaccine, but I want vaccine which is necessary. That's it.
Yeah. What about, let me ask you, this is also a question that always comes up, the whole issue of election integrity. I mean, you know, like you said, you ran before this became an issue and it's a pretty big issue now. What are your thoughts on that whole issue?
Well, I mean, right now, I'm kind of pragmatic. I always look at future and I don't dwell on the past. So there is a lot of things that happens in the past. We have no control now. And I said, if something happened, it happened in the past, but we have to move on. Let us look at what is going on. All we can learn from the past, as you know, and
what do you think the 2020 election, Biden was fairly elected?
I could not tell you for sure. Number one, I wasn't involved much at that time.
Right.
And number two, as I'm saying, that what happened, happened. He's the president right now.
Yeah.
I want to win the next election. I'm not worried about the past election.
Well, yeah,
let me tell you, Chuck, this. I said, if it was, they were smarter than us. So why don't we become smarter than them?
You have to figure out what they did to be
exactly
smarter than you before.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
You've got to recognize the techniques that they used before.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not going to dwell on all that thing. I'm going to learn from it.
Okay.
That's
okay.
How I'm a doctor. How do we become better doctor? We learn from our mistakes. That's why they always say we are practicing. We are always practicing.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it. Yeah. Exactly.
And what are your feelings on former President Trump?
What is that?
What are your feelings on former President Trump?
I think his policies were great. I mean, from my perspective, as I said, my principles, smaller government, lower taxes, less regulation. He met all three principles. And he was also on the life side. Actually, I carried a bill called, it was the bill which was called Right to Try. I was asked to see if I would carry the bill by the Goldwater Institute in Phoenix, Arizona. They came up with the idea. It wasn't my idea. I met them at one of the meeting. They say, you are the doctor, so you understand this better. So why don't you look at this bill and see if you want to carry it? So I brought it here, reviewed it, and then we did a bill. But the bill says that if there is a medicine in trial and up to phase 2 or 3, and it seems to be very effective, then if you have a terminal illness, your doctor can request this medicine and FDA cannot deny that.
Ah.
So we have patients who had terminal illnesses, whether it's a cancer, or we have actually in Denver, one of the news report, there is a dystrophy of the muscles that occurs in the children. And there was a drug available, which by second phase was so effective. Kids were feeling normal. But FDA would not give to any kids until it was past phase 4.
Yeah.
So what this bill did was now doctor can request. So interestingly, after we passed in Colorado, we were the first one. And I'm not the only one. I actually worked with, at that time, Representative Joanne Ginal, who is in the Senate now. And she had a family situation very similar that she couldn't get the medicine. And so she agreed to bless her heart. And she has a medical background. She has actually a PhD in endocrinology.
Oh.
And so she is a smart lady. I wish she was a Republican.
She will be if she starts turning her brain on somewhere.
You know what the Freedom Caucus is in the U.S. House. Would you want to be in the Freedom Caucus if you're elected?
I would not mind. I have to really look at who they are and what their principles are. Like, as you know, on the Capitol here, I was member of the Republican Study Committee of Colorado, which was something very similar. We were free enterprise and all these similar principles that probably part of the caucus, we were there. And so my bill eventually became, when Trump was running in 2016, part of the Republican platform.
Oh.
At the RNC. And then it went through the Congress and that Trump signed it. So now it's a federal bill. And President Trump, when he was running in 2020, he actually took the credit for this bill. If you watch his every speech, he says that right to try bill, I signed it and passed it. And I said, Mr. President, give me a little bit of credit. Not much. My ego is very small.
I got the idea. Well, hopefully you can get elected and then you can bring this up to you.
Really?
Let me just a couple of questions because we've got a full day. But, you know, it is at this time, I so appreciate what you talk about your grandchildren, right? Because we have a 13-year-old son and you look at what's going to be left. I mean, I think this election is extremely important. I mean,
he's 12, Julie.
Well, he's going to be 13 in a month. But so in my mind, he's a teenager. I have to drive him back.
42.
No, I know.
I drive him back and forth from school. I guarantee you he's a teenager. But at any rate, I mean, talk about how important, I mean, you jumped in after a hiatus, right? I mean, how important is this election, do you think?
Well, that's why I jumped in, because of the grandkids. I mean, I don't need any fame. I don't need any money at this point in my life. I'm fine. I could just live whatever time God has left for me. But I think that at the same time, you cannot sit inactive when you see so much going on in front of your eyes. Even when I was in the Colorado House, I mean, that's what I did. I remember I would just thump on my thing and I said, this bill is going to cost my grandson, so I will say no.
No, that's no, absolutely not.
Doctor, no, it's not a big deal. Well, sir, where can people find out more about you if they want to help, if they
want to contribute to your chance?
Sure. Well, we have the website up and running already. It says janakforcd8.com.
And Janak is...
Janakforcd8.
And that Janak is spelled?
J-A-N-A-K.
Okay. Janet great. From Colorado.
Well, you sound like a great candidate. You sound like a great candidate.
And Neil Mathai's endorsement. And that is not easy.
Neil and we go back many years when I ran the first time since then. So he's a good guy. Yeah.
And I know for folks who live in Adams County, Dr. Joseph, you're going to be, I think, at the Adams County Republican Party meeting next Thursday, right?
Yes. I'll be there. Right.
All right.
Well, that'd be great.
All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for running. And we'll
love to come back. And thank you for having me on your show. And we wish you best too, both
all
of
right.
you.
And, all right. We'll be talking. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. Dr. Janak Joshi there.
Sounds like a great candidate.
Janet for Colorado. Yeah, tons of great comments there. This is from Leo. Nice to have a candidate that actually gives a, you know what, Barney says, many of the Indians that come here are 10 times more patriotic than the Americans. Right. Jacob says, Pfizer is actually creating an antidote to their COVID vaccine. and then Leo goes back to Barney's, except for Nikki Haley. And then Sandra says, he's a breath of fresh air for the Colorado Republican Party. Well, like I said, Neil does not give endorsements easily.
No.
So he's endorsing him. A couple other things I want to touch on. At 3:30, we're going to have Wes Eimer and Laurel Eimer on.
Report from the RNC.
The RNC winter meeting, which has been a little bit contentious, kind of a split, obviously, between like all over.
The old establishment and the grassroots.
And some of these astonishing figures on what the RNC is spending money on, almost $1 billion, so they need a line of credit. So we'll get into all of that. But
when they're not raising very much money, the RNC in past years has always well surpassed the DNC. They had a lot of big pocket people. Now they're just awful.
Well, because all they're doing is, I mean, when you're spending $70,000, okay, just for one example, the RNC spent $70,000 on floral, right? Guess how much guess how much the DNC spent?
$795. Exactly.
$69,000 less. It's like, what the? So they're going to report.
Well, there's some people like flowers.
They're going to report from there. But want to talk about why we need to get people like Dr. Joshi in there. Ken Buck. Ken Buck could not get any worse. He gets worse.
Yes.
It's like, and he's not even doing CNN anymore. He is going straight. Oh, we've got Jacob raising his hand. Before we get to Ken Buck, Jacob, go ahead.
I understand that they took one of the court cases against Trump off the docket today.
That's right.
Yeah,
now, you're talking about PAC money being spent. A lot of that PAC money was spent on those cases. If that case never comes to trial, can they somehow get that money back?
No. That's your legal system at work for you, Jacob.
No. So in other words, they're trying to keep him away from money that he could have spent advertising to become president.
Exactly. Jacob, I think you hit it on the head there. The whole lawfare thing is twofold. One, just like you said, to force Trump to have to spend money on legal stuff.
Yes.
And I think a lot, they had really no intention, I think, of taking many of these cases to court anyway, because
of course they did. No, they wanted to put them in jail, I promise you.
Well, some cases, but some of them, it's just a nuisance. Well, they want to put them in jail, but I mean, they don't want to actually discuss the facts of the case, right?
Well, in front of a crooked judge and a crooked jury.
Well, but in some of the cases, and so they wanted to do that. They thought that all of this was going to hurt Trump, and instead it's helped him. So I think they're
maybe then it was money well spent if it's helping him, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Great publicity.
For us,
okay.
That's right.
Bye.
All right. Thank you, Jacob. But back to, so Marjorie Taylor Greene, they had introduced articles of impeachment against Mayorkas over the whole border thing. And Ken Buck, as you can imagine, stood strong with the Freedom Caucus and said, we need to, here in Colorado, Denver is one of the most impacted cities, blah, 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 right? No, that's not what Ken Buck said. Ken Buck said he is a solid no on impeachment. Let's take a look. This is Ken Buck talking to MSNBC.
Where else would he report?
Exactly. Could we please go to the Buck soundbite, Thomas?
Have leaders been trying to convince you otherwise? And is there anything that will change your mind? Or when you say solid no, you mean solid no?
Yeah, I'm not changing my mind. I have met with Chairman Green from the Homeland Security Committee. I have met with the staff. I have talked to outside constitutional experts. I've talked to former members of Congress about what this would mean for Congress. I believe I have done my due diligence, and I am standing firm at this point on this. If there's some new evidence, I'm happy to look at it, but I don't believe there will be.
What evidence is he talking about? I mean, it's a complete open border. We had Todd Watkins on the other day. You heard Dr. Joshi talking about the differences. It's like, I mean, here's the thing. Don't fool yourself. Ken Buck could care less about policy.
Well, that's what Tom Tancredo said. You know, he said he's just looking for something to make him, in his own mind, look good. And he thinks this sounds out of that principle because I'm standing with the Democrats. I mean, the guy is just a joke.
And maybe he realized CNN doesn't have any money, so he's not auditioning for a job for them anymore. But now he's trying to get on MSNBC. And real quick before, I think I saw we have Laurel Imer here, but before we go that, some sort of breaking news on the opt-out lawsuit. As I was saying, disappointingly, but not particularly surprisingly, the judge turned down the Colorado Republican Party's request for a preliminary injunction allowing them to close the next primary, right?
That is correct. And
I said, you guys are now kind of trying to figure out legal strategy moving forward.
Yeah, what do we do going forward? I mean, I'm very much realizing, having been a clerk on the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals for a judge, I know that just because you lost at the district court level, you should not give up the fight, especially an important constitutional fight like this one. And I think it's important to keep on going. But, you know, everybody's going to be disappointed, as they always are. But in law, the key is, you know, the race goes to the long distance runner. You know, there's so many cases where you think, well, oh, gosh. Let me say,
I mean, you're not shocked by this, right? I mean.
Oh, I'm disappointed. I mean, we had a Republican judge, and there aren't very many of them, everybody who was there, and I was not there, but everyone was there, said our side really did a good job in presenting it. After the last case, and we were for Judge Kane, where it didn't matter what we said, we couldn't possibly win. I have a feeling it's the same way. It, in law, unfortunately, you know, the bias of the judge is so enormous in many cases, not all, but in many cases, that the case is decided before you say your first word.
Right.
Not all cases, but certainly in political cases.
Right.
What the political leanings, and this is a Bush judge, and he could have been one who believes that grassroots and not the establishment, or he could have been a Bush, in which case he thinks that, you know, the
establishment. Well, here's what we have, like, you know, you pointed out before, the star witnesses for the political hack, Jenna Griswold, the Democrat team, were Rhinos, Dick Wadhams, and Suzanne Steyer. Right. Two Republicans.
And apparently, Dave said he relied greatly on their testimony.
So once again, so that, going back to Dr. Joshi, this is why we need people like him, not like Ken Buck, who will turn around and stab the grassroots Republicans in the back, not because they care about principles, not because Dick Wadhams actually thinks that Donald Trump is the reason we can't win, not because Dick Wadhams believed anything he actually said in the trial, but simply because they want to hang on to their power. They're clinging to, they'd rather have a little bit of power. And we'll get into the RNC too, right? Why on earth is the RNC spending $79,000 or $70,000 on floral? Why do we think we're losing?
Are you against flowers, Julie?
Well, no, but I mean, $795 is a lot to spend on. What the frick? You know, that's a lot to spend. But it's
Mother's Day is coming up.
Yeah. I want a $70,000 bouquet, for Pete's sakes. That comes with the World Cruise, right? I mean, but again, the Democrats are smart and they want to win. The Republicans just want, the ones who are in power just want to stay in power so they can make money. And we see that over and over again. And I don't know, I thought I saw Laurel Imer in the Zoom meeting. Laurel, whoops, Chuck. Yeah. Laurel, are you there? If you're there, we can bring her on. Then we can bring Wes on, Thomas, if he comes in. If not, maybe she was just testing it.
Okay. I'm here.
Oh, good. Okay.
Oh, ta-da.
Thank you. I know you're like me. It's only 3:29, Julie. So, hey, and Thomas, our producer, when Wes shows up, just go ahead and bring him in on too. So you've been at the, and first I want to say you're running in Colorado for the RNC committee woman. So good luck on that.
Yes.
And I have endorsed you for that. And if I get to be a place where I have a vote, I would vote for you. But so tell me about this. So it's the RNC winter meeting.
Are you joining Weston?
Is Wes coming on? You guys can share if you want, or he can have his own phone, however.
Okay, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to join or not, but I'm here.
You're right, okay, perfect. Right. Okay.
We got the mom.
I'm the best one anyway. So, you know, if I look a little haggard, it's because I'm exhausted because we've been going at this for 5 solid days and my old worn out body here.
You aren't kidding. Well, give us maybe just sort
and
of
I'm an getting overview. Younger, you know.
Give us sort of an overview of what happened.
Is it as big a war as everybody says between the grassroots?
Or was it a love fest for Romney McDaniel?
Well, you know, actually in some parts of the room, yes, it was a love fest. And then there was the faction, right? Those of us who, I mean, I appreciate her. That she has done some things that are right. I'm not going to say that. She's very nice. She's very kind. One of the things I can say about her, honestly, is she's very good at thanking the people around her that help her. She's very warm in that regard. And so, you know, you can't just bash somebody 100% of the time. You got to give them the credit where the credit is due. And she's a very kind lady. But I don't agree with $700,000 worth of flowers, and I am all about flowers, but that is extreme. It's just, you know, it's extreme. And for what? I mean, yes, the venue was beautiful here. We're in Las Vegas. We're in, you know, the Western States armpit of hell, you know, but you know, so it did need some beautifying. It needed to, you know, have something better to look at than pornographic material on the streets. So I appreciated the flowers, but and there weren't as many. Weston, having attended, I think 4 or 5 of these meetings now, Weston said that there weren't as many as normal. So I think she's even cut just, you know, she probably saw those budget numbers and was like, oh my gosh, we gotta tone this down. But there were beautiful flowers at the front. There was beautiful arrangements on the tables, you know, but I think you can do some of that, but you know, we need to win elections, and flowers don't win elections. I was told once that yard signs don't vote. Well, I think yard signs vote more than flowers do.
Right.
I can say, right. The flowers, maybe if the flowers had flags in them for candidates, then maybe you say that the flowers vote. But without that, I don't think they're doing anything to win voters and to make the RNC function as it should.
Well, here's another thing too I saw. And so the RNC spent on voter file systems $39,000. Get this, the DNC spent $236,000. So almost $200,000 more. To your point, you got to wonder, whoa, if the Democrats are spending $700 on flowers and $236,000 on voters, and the RNC's got that backwards, maybe that is a factor in why we're not winning.
Well, right. It has to be. What are the grassroots screaming from the hilltops? Voter rolls, voter rolls, voter rolls, right?
Right.
And what are they spending their money on?
Flowers.
Not, you know, limos.
And getting out the vote. You look at those numbers of the get out the vote operations, right? Look at the discrepancy there.
Right.
You know, and the limousine service?
They spent, okay, the RNC spent as much on limousines as the DNC spent on voters.
I mean, I like limos.
I'm not gonna lie. I like limos.
So limos to drive the voters to the ballot box.
But that's not what they're doing. The DNC sends Uber to do that. We don't even do that. If it was an Uber bill to pick up voters to take them to vote, then I'd be okay with that. But that's not what it's about.
Well, here and again to comparison. You know. So once again. The DNC spent $236,000 on voter issues. The Republicans spent $39,000. The RNC spent $263,000 on limos. The DNC spent $7,000.
To get the Uber boot.
Well, and here's another one, consultants. This is great.
Well, we have the best consultants. We love consultants.
We spent $298,000 on consultants.
Excellent.
I bet are Ronna McDaniel's friends. I'm just guessing there. And the DNC spent $45,000.
Oh, we're going to win now. We're going to win. We've got.
Said if you have more limos and more flowers and more consultants.
And those consultants.
Forget those silly voters.
We've won.
Was there any discussion of this there?
Well, I couldn't be in that part of the meeting that was a closed. Well, actually, they started out having that as an open meeting. And then as soon as they started talking about the budget, she went into executive session.
Excellent.
It pissed a lot of people. That pissed a lot of people off. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I'll give her credit where her credit's due, but I'm also going to call her out. The whole time today in general session at the end of the day, talking about transparency, when they were talking about the budget. Transparency. Well, where the hell's the transparency when you kick half the room out and go into executive session? There's no transparency there. So, I mean, I know there was today at the general session when the budget was finally voted on, there were several states that stood up and were absolutely against it. Arizona was definitely one of them with Tyler Bauer. Wyoming was definitely one of them. You know, there was a handful others that stood up against approving her budget. And then in addition to that, she didn't call a roll call vote. She just had a quick vote. And there was people in the back of the room, like myself, guests who were behind the ropes. And we heard people from behind the ropes being part of that yes vote.
So
Tyler Bauer stood up and said, no, you know, we want to call that. And they voted it down. Wow. You know, she didn't want transparency. She didn't want people to own up to their vote. And so, unfortunately, the budget passed. We don't even know what it was. I heard it was somewhere like, I think 80 billion. I'm not sure. 80 million. 80. I'm really not sure.
Not billion.
So I'll chime in here a little bit.
Go ahead and chime in.
Yeah.
This is Westheimer, guys.
Yes. I had to leave the room. I didn't want our audios to step on each other. What I can tell you is, like, I went up afterwards and I spoke with Randy Corcoran, our committee man. I didn't have a chance to talk with Dave. He was on his way to the airport already. But I spoke with Randy and I said, you know, what's the story on the budget? You know, we didn't, you know, see this. We have no idea what was in it. What was the situation? And he says, well, I was a no vote, and I didn't hear how the other people voted. He says, we can assume that Dave voted no or didn't vote, and we can also safely assume that, you know, Vera Ordegon voted yes. But he says, it was a decent budget. It was definitely slim and trim. It was definitely better allocated than the past budgets have been. You know, when you guys were talking about, you know, the totals that have been allocated for all these different, you know, things, you know, $70,000 in flowers. Right. And as my mom mentioned, you know, I walked in and the first thing I said, oh, instead of 5,000 in flowers this week, we only have $500 in flowers. You know, it was certainly different. I mean, we were at the summer meeting in Milwaukee a few months ago, and you know, the amount of flowers on the stage and in that room and the bouquets, I mean, I know how much they are. I know how much these ones were, you know, around. So it's definitely an improvement, but it certainly is not great. And the amount of money that they should be spending on voter outreach, get out the vote efforts, you know, all of these, you know, investments that they're trying to make in our elections and trying to win votes and secure Republican majorities, it was not there. And it is highly alarming to me, and it should be alarming to everyone. And you guys all need to realize how important these national committee elections are, because these people have, pardon me, I'm standing outside the elevator bank here, these people have impact on what the RNC spends and where the RNC spends their money. And if we are not electing true fiscal conservatives to these roles, we will never have a winning election, you know, budget again. And it's critical.
Well, let me, Laurel, ask you about this. And again, pointing out that you are running for Republican committee women, which in order to vote for that, just so you guys know, this is why you need to go to your caucuses that are coming up next month, because this is where you start the process to become a PCP and then a delegate to these various things so you can vote. Where do things stand? I mean, I was reading that they might, they decided apparently not to, but to have a no confidence vote. Yeah, I mean, there was very much the last time around, you know, Ronna McDaniel was not beloved and, you know, there was no coronation when she won this time. You know, we had Harmeet Dhillon, Mike Lindell, who didn't get very many votes, but what's the mood there? I mean, is she doing things to try to shore up her position so she can stay in power, or is somebody, I mean, what's going on there that you know?
Well, there was rumor early in the beginning of the week that she was going to announce that she was going to step down, but that she was going to do it in 5 months at the end of the Republican National Convention. And so everybody, you know, got like kind of weirded out, like, what does that mean? You know, so on and so forth. And then that talk kind of died down. I think it was just, you know, a play from somewhere planted out there. But, you know, she clearly had, I don't think has any intent to step down ahead of the election. And as much as I dislike the things that she's done, the reality is we do have an election to win.
Okay.
And if she were to step down, what would we do? Right. We must have someone who knows what they're doing and it has some kind of game plan. You know, we're 9 months from an election. So right. I'm not completely sure that it would be a good idea unless we had step someone ready to fill that space immediately.
What about the next time around? What about
next time around? You know, that vote will be up in January when the new that was another thing they did today. They had a rules change to rule number three. Typically, new incoming RNC committee men and women take their position at the end of gavel after the Republican National Convention is over at the RNC convention. They had a rule change to three. So now that will not happen until the end, until the winter meeting will be when they will be installed. So that's a rule change. They said
what's the significance?
The
significance is the start of the term.
And women can help kind of to teach the new ones coming in during off time.
Sure.
I don't know. I had a feeling about it, but
it's really an interesting change. I'm sorry, Mona, but I was in, you know, Randy Corcoran was in the room, you know, that day, and I talked to him right away. Vera Ordegon sits on the rules committee that, you know, put this rule recommendation in place. And really what their intent is that when, and I spoke with a few of the other committee members as well, and they kind of shared the same thought, was that the way the rule sits now, and this is Republican National Committee Rule 3, and it has to be adopted by the full body of the National Convention, as well as voted on at the summer meeting by the membership of the RNC. So they'll vote for it at the summer meeting, which is the week prior to the National Convention. And it will also then, once the RNC finally votes and approves it, it will then move to the Rules Committee of the National Convention, which then the National Convention body has to vote yea or nay to the rules. So this is not an RNC decision at the end of the day. It's a National Convention decision. So that affects your delegates, you know, whoever you're putting up to be a delegate. You have to make sure they are how you want to be on the Rules Committee and on these platform committees, making sure they're going to vote the way you want. But the one critical piece is, you know, as you mentioned, it takes effect at the winter meeting, which would be in January of 2025. And the rule proposal right now is that these new members would take their seats at the beginning gavel of the winter meeting in 2025, which would start their term virtually the same as whoever the new president is. And then their term would carry from the duration of the presidential term to the end of the presidential term is how it would work. So your term would end at the beginning gavel of the winter meeting in 2026, or sorry, what would that be, 2029, right? But you would begin in 2025, right? So there's no effect on the chairman vote. That was the critical question. Answered was, would this affect the vote for chair in 2025? It would not. Whoever else you bring in now, whether it's, you know, as members of the Youth Advisory Council, so cleverly dubbed people, members of the Anti-Rana Reject Club, if you elect people like that, they will still be able to vote for a different person other than Ron McDaniel. And there are some rumors going around. You know, you talked about that briefly, about who's going to be the replacement of Rana. And it looks like there is a concern, you know, developing. And I don't want to say too much because I don't want to confirm the rumors I'm hearing. But it sounds like there is already a pick in place for who's going to replace Ron. And it sounds like it's someone that the president has picked, actually.
Oh. So that would be good then.
Someone, well, maybe. Well, the concern is that the... We're not hearing that. They're the people in the room, the grassroots members of the Republican National Committee, the people that are supporting Laurel, the people that are like Randy Corcoran, have all spoken up and said it's not someone they like. However, they were told not to say who, but it is not Harmeet Dhillon, I can tell you that much. But it's not someone they would like to see chair.
It's intriguing. Well, one thing you do have to say, I mean, as you have said, one thing that Trump does seem to be really bad at
is picking people
right. sometimes. I mean, unless
sometimes
it's barren.
That's his blind spot.
Or something. So, hey, well, there's a final question for you guys, because I know you've got planes to catch and things like that. So at this meeting, do you leave it feeling, I mean, even all the
upbeat or
are we on our own out here in Colorado doing?
Like I said, again, giving credit where we can. I think that they're trying, right? They may not be doing everything that us grassroots people believe they should be doing, but they're not doing nothing. They aren't. They're not doing nothing. The problem is a disconnect because there's no communication between them and those of us on the ground. That's where I come in. That's my goal, is to be a better communicator, to make sure that the grassroots and the constituents in Colorado understand what the RNC is doing, that they are working for us. They do have currently 77 election integrity cases active right now that they are pursuing. 60 of them are 60 of them they are pursuing ahead of the game, not from behind the eight ball, in areas and regions where they are seeing problems and they know there's a problem. They're going in now with lawsuits already. There's 60 of those right now. So these things are important, and nobody on the ground knows that, right? So everybody thinks, right, oh, they don't care about election integrity, or they're not fighting for us. They are doing some of those things. You know, there is a grassroots group that meets about messaging. They are trying to do those things. They're trying to bring grassroots ideas into the RNC. They are trying those things. But when we don't communicate that back, then we just have a disconnect. And then that causes more division, right?
Right.
And we've been talking about unity, unity, unity. Okay, I have an issue with unity, unity, unity. We don't need to preach unity. If we had transparency and communication, we would automatically have unity.
There you go.
Okay?
All right.
So that's why you have to elect me to be the committee woman on April 6th, being a delegate, state assembly. Vital.
Well, and I'll kind of close that out of, you know, this unity speech that everyone is giving is outrageous. I mean, there is no love lost on me here at the RNC. Rana openly shunned me and dissed me, you know, several times at this meeting because of my criticisms of her. And even members of the staff that normally would come up and be, you know, super nice and, hey, it's great to see you, you know, didn't even say hello to me at this meeting, you know. And that's because I've been very critical as a member of the youth council. You know, we've done nothing. And, you know, I have to say, the reason I am so critical, it's not for personal gain, it's not for personal benefit, it's to ensure that we are winning elections. And that is not what I see happening here. Now, I do think we are on the course to change that. I think that, you know, Rana is laser focused, at least from her speech today in the general session, which, you know, you couldn't record in there, you couldn't really do much, so I can't share it. But I can tell you from a perspective of someone you trust, at least I hope you trust me, is that she is laser focused on moving her focus and the RNC's focus to the general election, which would be partnering with the nominee, joint fundraising with the nominee, working together as a team to win and beat Biden. And that is her goal, and that is her focus. And I think that you're going to see that continue to grow. I think we are on the right path forward. I don't think we should let down the pressure, because the pressure is working. The pressure is showing that, you know, there are problems. And that's why they're preaching this unity. You know, it was a love fest in several of these meetings where they openly berate the America First members of the National Committee for their criticisms. And, you know, I got, you know, Twitter attacked while I was here by people that were in the room across the table from me. You know, I mean, it was brutal. But we're on the path forward. Don't let up the pressure. Stay involved. Stay in the fight. Back the right candidates for the national committee, and put the right people on these delegates, you know, in these delegate seats come the, you know, convention, because that is where it is critical. We have a platform to vote on. We have rules to vote on, and we have a nominee to elect, and it better be Donald Trump.
All right.
Well, thank you, guys, giving the report.
Yeah.
And hearing from both of you.
Yeah,
somewhat different.
Which
is great.
That's okay. But no, we appreciate it, because, like you said, we have no idea out here,
right?
Because, of course, the corporate media doesn't cover this at all. So, you guys, thank you for the jobs that you're doing. We appreciate you so much. And we will see you guys later. Travel safe back to Denver.
Thank you.
All right. Bye, guys.
Appreciate it.
Yep, thank you. We had a ton of comments here. Oh, this is Leo. He's saying the RNC is trying like a quadriplegic in a life vest with an outgoing tide. This is from Sandra. Why Trump sometimes picks bad people. Trump's not a politician. He trusted people like we all do until someone throws us under the bus. I agree with you on this, Andrew. I truly believe he's much smarter now. And then she says, and Ron McDaniel is a you-know-what, kick her you-know-what out. And then Leo says AOC would be better as RNC chair. And then Charlene, I also agree with this. Rana's job is to keep the global cabal in power and suppress patriots. And then Sandra says, good people, Laurel and Weston.
Yeah.
That is going to wrap it up for us on this Party Friday. Next week, we've got a great
jam-packed, great lineup.
That's right. We've got Colonel John Mills coming on. He's going to be talking about what the frick is Biden doing. And I guess we're bombing Syria now.
Thank God.
Well,
what have we been doing? We haven't been bombing enough.
We haven't. That's what
we spent our time bombing the Houthis, which is good. But we need more bombing in Syria, Iraq, and Jordan, and four or five other countries.
Yeah, Ukraine, whatever. So he's going to come in and kind of explain all of that. And then on Wednesday...
Oh, he's going to explain it? That's good.
Yeah, but then we're going to have Mark Poffin on Wednesday. I don't know if you've seen some screw-up at the Colorado Bureau of Investigation. Yeah. They had to ask for millions of more dollars in the legislature.
$7.5 million, because one of the technical scientists apparently was taking shortcuts and saying, oh, yeah, DNA is this guy.
The match. So, I mean, literally hundreds
of cases,
criminal cases, and could be overturned in Colorado. So we'll talk to him
about
that.
Even some innocent people, maybe.
Well, yeah, maybe thrown in. No. But anyway, that's all going on. It is great to see everybody on Zoom. Thank you to all of you. Thank you to Dr. Josie, to Wes and Laurel, to Thomas at BBS. It's Party Friday.
Yahoo!
We'll see you all on Monday.